Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram, the weekend edition, Saturday, January 8, 2022, Section A. Oil prices near pre-pandemic levels, by Mella McEwen. Crude prices again approached pre-pandemic levels during the first trading week of 2022, buoyed by resilient demand, though some analysts worry the raging Omicron variant of the COVID-19 coronavirus could still impact demand. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 4 of 5 trading days, including a $1.61 jump Thursday to post a 5% gain for the week. Prices slumped 56 cents Friday to close at $78.90, up from $76.08 at Monday's close. Natural gas prices on the NYMEX rose 3 of 5 trading days, including a 16.5 cent jump Wednesday and a 10.4 cent rise on Friday, to end the week at 393.916 per MCF. Top executives of leading independents like Pioneer Natural Resources and Diamondback Energy told a Goldman Sachs Group Energy Conference webcast they dread the thought of oil prices reaching $100 or more. "Our philosophy is in line with that," Steve Harris, Vice President, Chief Executive Officer of Abraxas Petroleum, said, saying $100 oil is not good for the consumer. He said the industry stands to benefit if prices remain range-bound in their current range of $65 to $75 a barrel. "More challenging to producers than prices in the current administration, whose actions are keeping prices artificially high by limiting domestic producers' ability to develop resources. Producers can figure out how and can figure out high and low prices. They can't cope with an administration out to eradicate the industry." Todd Staples, president of Texas Oil and Gas Association, said industry leaders have a good feel for circumstances impacting the industry both nationally and internationally. "Prices are subject to pandemic issues, international conflicts, and weather, among other issues." His association is focusing on maintaining a healthy state and national environment where producers can create jobs and invest in their operations. "We want a healthy industry. Upstream, service companies, the midstream sector needs to be strong, and our domestic refiners and LNG companies. It's an integrated system, and everyone benefits when all sectors are working well. The current environment is stronger than the last couple of years." He did note that production costs are beginning to rise along with the cost of about everything else, so operators will have a fine balancing act to be able to get product to market to meet demand. "Current prices are strong enough to let operators get their balance sheets in shape, return money to shareholders, and work with the investment community on the future of the industry and how it can create jobs and invest in developing production and research products to improve efficiencies and industry's environmental footprint. Oil and gas is integral to everyone's lives. Energy demand will continue to grow, and oil and gas will be called on to meet that demand. But the industry does not need certainty," Staples says. County sees 308 new cases in one day, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported more than 300 COVID cases on December 31st. The total is a preliminary number and might be updated, but 308 cases involving people from Midland County mark the first time, going back to late October 2020, that more than 300 cases were reported in a day. The number of cases brought the total number of cases for December 26 through 31 to 1,170, a total that is already its fourth most cases in one week and is three times more than were reported during the previous week. The Midland Health Department also shows two other days during the week with 200-plus cases. There were no reports from January 1 through 7 as of Friday afternoon. Midland Health reported that the number of COVID inpatients at Midland Memorial Hospital increased from 68 to 85 on Friday. The hospital showed the number of total inpatients rose from 212 to 229. The hospital shows 260 available rooms, which means the hospital is currently 88% full. Hospital officials said Friday, all of the COVID inpatients are in the hospital for COVID and not something else, and that 82% of the COVID inpatients are unvaccinated. The positivity rate from tests at Midland Health testing areas remains over 50%. Midland Health reported 51.3% of the 1,145 tests were positive. Reports of dire drop in gas production gets pushback by Mellon McEwen. Texas oil and gas operators and regulators pushed back Friday on reports there was a dire situation with the state's natural gas production amid cold weather this past weekend. The Texas Oil and Gas Association issued a report clarifying that Texas natural gas production declined 5%, not 25%. Texas Tribune won't say where it got its numbers, Todd Staples said. He went on to note that Bloomberg had since corrected its report that 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas had to be flared due to the cold conditions to 1 million cubic feet instead. Texoga added that the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality will investigate, but initial reports confirmed this should be within normal operating expectations and the impact should be minimal. Texoga's report noted that the reports of actual flows of gas, natural gas, are delivered monthly, not daily, but analysts can offer estimates based on market activity. Analyst IHS Market, using data from the Energy Information Administration, estimated weekly production in the Permian Basin fell by 800 million cubic feet. Analyst RBN Energy estimated Permian production levels declined from near 14 BCF a day to 10, a decline of 3 BCF or 22% due to not only the cold but high winds, which often impact Permian production and not just during cold weather. Texoga's report concluded whatever the actual number is for all of Texas when all producing basins are included, the drop in natural gas production is not unique to Texas, nor was the Texas production decline anywhere near a major issue for overall gas availability for those who plan ahead and utilize the vast amount of natural gas storage. The Railroad Commission agreed, saying in a statement that production can fluctuate on any given day at any given hour for various reasons. However, the RRC has not received any indications that production decreased anywhere near the extent that has been reported. During the weekend and after, major producers we contacted did not report any drastic disruption of gas production. In a statement, the commission noted that the sources used in some media reports utilized pipeline nominations, which are basically contract requests for space in the pipeline system to transport gas, to estimate real-time gas production. That approach is speculative and does not paint a complete picture, especially given that gas trading markets were closed for the holiday weekend. According to the commission, the Permian Basin also saw a recent acceleration in drilling and completion activities. Since the start of the fourth quarter of last year, Permian operators have added more than 30 rigs to the basin, bringing the total to an estimated 300 the week of December that ended December 29th. Again, there was plenty of gas flowing to power generators and homes, the commission concluded. What's that going to be on Tradewinds Boulevard? Construction has started on a new shopping center among the restaurants and hotels in West Midland. It is called the Osaka Shopping Center and will be located on the northwest corner of Tradewinds Boulevard and Duville Boulevard. The center will be located to the south of Osaka Sushi Restaurant and north of La Michelle.
Hello, this is Michael. Continuing to read from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, January 8th. Gas prices see little change in the last few weeks, by Stuart Doreen. Not much has changed with gas prices going back to mid-December, according to AAA Texas. The average in Midland and Odessa has dropped by 2 cents to $3.06 during that time period, while the state average remains the same, $2.91. AAA Texas did note that prices are up in Midland and across the state 2 cents week over week. The organization cited strong demand from the holidays and optimism in the global market that are pushing both gasoline and crude prices higher. This news comes as the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies, OPEC Plus, agreed this week to stick with their plan to add another 400,000 barrels per day of supply starting next month, AAA Texas reported. Market observers note the move by OPEC Plus suggests the organization is optimistic demand for crude oil will remain strong despite a growing number of new COVID-19 cases across the globe, AAA Texas stated in its weekly report. The cheapest average among the 27 largest metropolitan areas across the state was $2.80 in San Antonio. Across the West Texas region, the lowest average was Amarillo, $2.81, an increase of 8 cents week over week and an increase of 9 cents since mid-December, according to AAA Texas. Other averages across the region included $2.83 in Lubbock, up 1 cent week over week and since mid-November, $2.88 in San Angelo, up 5 cents this week and 2 cents since mid-December, and $2.94 in Abilene, up 2 cents this week and down 2 cents since December. Drivers in Midland are paying 7 cents less for gasoline since November. The state average has dropped 12 cents during the same period. The prices in Midland and across the state have increased year over year, according to AAA Texas. AAA Texas also reported that both averages have increased by 94 cents in the last year. Midland area rents staying well below March 2020 levels, by Stuart Doreen. Rents are recovering across the nation since March 2020, except a few locations. Two of those are Midland and Odessa. Oil country accounts for the biggest decreases in rent nationwide since March 2020, according to apartmentlist.com, which shows decreases of 25% or more in Odessa, Midland, and Williston, North Dakota. Those three cities are at the top of the list of cities across the country in terms of the largest percentage drops. Odessa is number one at 28%. Midland is second at 25.2%. Williston rounds out the top three at 25%. A few other locations across the country have showed decreases, like the areas around San Francisco, 15%, Minneapolis, 7.9%, and Washington, D.C., 2.7%. In Texas, the rent increased the most percentage-wise in Waco, 35.8% since March 2020. 30-plus percent increases also took place in Temple and Killeen. Odessa posted the lowest one- and two-bedroom rents at $510 and $698 a month, respectively. Midland was also among the lowest in the state at $681 and $831, respectively. The highest two-bedroom rent was in the Dallas suburb of Flower Mound, $2,136. Nationally, ApartmentList.com reports that over the course of 2021 as a whole, rent prices spiked an unprecedented 17.8% nationally. The national median rent finished at $1,309.
Billy Protho Mabee Hightower passed away on Tuesday, January 4th. Celebration of life will be held on Saturday, January 8th at 10 a.m. at First Baptist Chapel. Private burial will be held at Rest Haven Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Welsh Funeral Home. Carol Ann Hall passed away on December 12th. Due to health concerns, the celebration of life will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Welsh Funeral Home. Marion Lane Luttrell passed away on January 1st. Celebration of life will be held on Monday, January 10th at 3 p.m. at Nellie Pickelin Welsh Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Welsh Funeral Home. Kathleen Linebarger Graham passed away on December 14th. A celebration of life will be held in Midland on January 15th at Nalapickle and Welsh Funeral Home at 12 noon. A reception will follow at Ranchland Hills Country Club from 1 to 3. Arrangements are under the direction of Nalapickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Martha Lou Elder passed away on Thursday, September 23rd. A private graveside service was held in Coleman City Cemetery on Wednesday, September 29th. She was laid to rest on her family plot. Services were entrusted to Stevens Funeral Home in Coleman. Teddy Ray Smith passed away on December 24th in Weatherford. A memorial service will be held at Stonegate Fellowship in Midland on Thursday, January 13th at 3 p.m. Adeline Grace Avalar passed away on January 5th. The funeral service was held on Thursday, January 6th at Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity in Midland. Funeral service is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Shelley Dawn Parker of Midland passed away on January 4th. A graveside service will be Monday, January 10th at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 8th. Pfluger gives Inside Washington View. Congressman derides Biden administration's assault on the energy industry by Bob Campbell. Wrapping up his first year in office, Congressman August Pfluger looks back on a tumultuous time of extreme partisanship and grueling exertions to protect the oil and gas industry and establish the Permian Basin as the most important energy-producing region in the nation. Interviewed Wednesday morning from his hometown of San Angelo after an information-gathering trip to the Texas-Mexico border, Pfluger said the vehemence of the Biden administration's assault on fossil fuels often had him working from before dawn to well into the night. Every single day has been full of learning, the 44-year-old former Air Force fighter pilot said. Our district needs a voice in Washington because oil and gas and rural America are under attack. There's been a lot of turmoil and chaos, and the country is heading in a direction with new taxes and out-of-control spending that my constituents and I don't agree with. Trust has been eroded. Our district is fueling, clothing, and feeding the country, and it is vital to our national security with oil and gas. Pfluger strongly disapproved of the violence that occurred when supporters of outgoing Trump stormed the Capitol on January 6th, 2020, and he criticized Biden and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi for their indifference to mob violence last summer in Los Angeles, Portland, Chicago, Seattle, and just outside the White House. The people have every right to protest, but violence is never acceptable, he said. Violent people have been breaking into stores and doing smash and grabs all across America, and President Biden and Speaker Pelosi have not condemned any of it. Asked if Biden has fomented a climate of permissiveness, Pfluger said, there is no question. The permissiveness starts at our border, where the sacredness of having a sovereign nation starts. There is an attitude of breaking the law and degrading law and order that the president is directly responsible for. Pfluger said the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol lacks credibility because Pelosi barred Republican Representatives Jim Jordan of Ohio and Jim Banks of Indiana from serving on it. Why is this a partisan thing? He asked. Kicking off Jim Jordan and Jim Banks makes us question the motive. It is a partisan committee that will not produce any sort of reliable result, and I don't think the public will trust the result. During his first year, Pfluger said, he wrote 14 bills, including the Afghanistan Threat Assessment Act, which became law, a resolution calling on Russia to free former U.S. Marine Trevor Reed of Granbury, who was sentenced to 9 years in prison for allegedly assaulting policemen in Moscow, and the illicit cross-border tunnel development. Defense Act and Energy Diplomacy Act, which were approved by House committees. I also authored bills to secure the border, strengthen election security, nullify vaccine mandates, promote the oil and gas industry, support farmers and ranchers, safeguard the Second Amendment, provide for veterans, stand up for parents' rights in education, and protect the unborn, he said. The congressman visited all 29 counties in the 11th Congressional District, held 26 in-person town hall meetings, reached 360,000 constituents through telephone town halls, rescued 650 people from Afghanistan after American troops were withdrawn, responded to over 45,000 letters, emails, and phone calls, solved more than 800 constituents' cases, hosted 15 interns, and flew 80 flags over the Capitol, he said. Asked his view of Washington's political polarization, Pfluger said, "It's very disappointing. We didn't get here overnight. It happened over a long period of time. I think 2008-09 was when we saw the partisan pendulum hit the wall on the other side, and then there was an equal and opposite reaction. We said, hey, you're not listening to our voice, and we have a voice too. I talk to people on the other side of the aisle who say, yes, but I just can't do that. I wish I could do something, but the speaker won't let me. I have a duty to reach across the aisle in a genuine, sincere way, because we need to get back to where we can have civil discourse and do what is in the best interests of our country," he said. "There is a real lack of trust in the government right now with the overreach and mandates. We need transparent discussions. If we're spending $5 trillion, the public deserves to know exactly where that money is being spent." House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California told the Odessa American in a Wednesday afternoon email that Pfluger has already shown he's an important voice in the House Republican Conference for protecting American energy security and border security. August set an impressive early marker of leadership when he became the first freshman member of either party to introduce a bill in Congress, McCarthy said. Referring to his February 11, 2021 trip to Midland with Pfluger and House Natural Resources Ranking Member Bruce Westerman of Arkansas to see a Diamondback Energy drilling rig, McCarthy said, "I enjoyed visiting the Permian Basin, which August fearlessly represents, and learning from the incredible women and men in the Texas oil and gas industry about why their work is such an integral part to powering our country. I was also at the southern border with August when our group of Republican lawmakers exposed the fact that known and suspected terrorists were crossing the border in El Paso under the Biden administration. I know August will continue to fight to protect our country as the lead Republican for intelligence and counterterrorism on the Homeland Security Committee and push back on the Biden administration's assault against American energy production." Pfluger said the keys to the Republicans regaining control of the House in the November 8th election are promoting greater parental control of education, exposing Biden's missteps in foreign affairs and the economy, and fighting for what we believe will make this country even stronger. "We have a plan for 2023, and it starts with giving the American public and parents everywhere a parent's bill of rights, so parents can tell the government what they'll do with their kids," he said. "We need to focus on good policy and realign what the administration has done with the Russians and Chinese. The economy has become very inflationary, anti-debt-driven. Inflation is at its highest point in 40 years, which we all felt at Thanksgiving and Christmas. Prices have gone up everywhere, and in our district, the administration is trying to cut oil and gas off at the knees. Biden's green light to the Nord Stream pipeline from Russia to Germany is weakening our allies in Europe every day." Pfluger said a freshman congressman can only gain influence by listening carefully and showing he is trustworthy. "Winning my primary and election outright allowed me to get to know those I would be serving with early," he said. There are a variety of personalities in Congress, and the key to being a successful member is to be humble and approachable. When you speak to people, do more listening than speaking. I brought my passion for serving in the military to serving this district, and I truly believe I have established myself and our district as the experts on energy and energy policy. Man charged with assaulting and threatening girlfriend. A 30-year-old man was arrested after police say he assaulted his girlfriend and threatened to kill her with a handgun. Psyche, capital T-Y-S-K-I, Wells, 30, was charged with aggravated assault with a weapon, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened December 28th in the 4500 block of Dixie Boulevard. The complainant, identified as Lassace Akins, stated she had been assaulted by her boyfriend, Wells, at the listed residence. Akins received injuries that required medical treatment at Medical Center Hospital, including stitches to her lip, swelling to her face, bleeding from her nose, and bruises on her chest. Akins stated that Wells began arguing with her over a text message she had received, and then he began assaulting her by punching her and pushing her down. Akins also stated that Wells grabbed a turquoise in-color Glock 9mm semi-automatic handgun and placed it to her head, threatening to kill her. Wells was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on January 5th. He had one bond totaling $30,000 and posted bail on January 5th.
Hi, this is Jane reading from the Odessa American, Saturday, January 8th edition, from the obituary section. Anna J. Leva, 47, of Odessa, died on Thursday, December 31st, 2020, in Odessa. Tony Alarcon Marquez, Jr., 56, of Odessa, died on Tuesday, December 7th, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m., January 10th, 2022, at Odessa Funeral Home. Visitation will be held on Sunday, January 9th, 2022, from 2 until 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Burial will be followed by funeral services Monday, January 10th, 2022, at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home. Faithful wife and loving mom, grandmother, and great-grandmother Velma Jane Watkins was born on May 27th, 1936, in Wattensaw, Arkansas, to Avery Jewell and Mary Jane Kennedy. She passed away peacefully from this life on January 3rd, 2022. She was preceded in death by her parents, her sister Kathleen Kennedy, her husband of 68 years, Jack N. Watkins, and her oldest son, Jack D. Watkins. Renita Aldridge Brownlee, 64, died on Monday, December 27th, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Betty Fran Fugit, 85, died on Wednesday, December 29th, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Adam Scott Gadeo, 40, died on Monday, December 27th, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Constantina Josefina Acosta Rivas, 85, of Odessa, died on Saturday, January 1st, 2022, in Dallas, Texas. Michael Dale Thomas, 52, died on Friday, December 31st, 2021, in Odessa. Mary Sue Wood, 83, died on Friday, December 3rd, 2021, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Adela Larea Vasquez was born in Odessa, Texas, on May 11th, 1949, and received her heavenly wings on Monday, January 3rd, 2022. She lived most of her years in Odessa, Texas. On August 10th, 1968, She married the love of her life, Gilbert Vasquez, in Alice, Texas. She leaves behind her beloved mother, Aurora, her beloved husband, Gilbert, daughter, Monica, son, Patrick, sister, Mariana, and two brothers, Faustina and Danny. Joyce Way Meeks.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, January 9th. Precinct 2 race has three Odessans vying for spot. Longtime commissioner draws opponents in GOP primary by Kim Smith. Longtime Ector County Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons will face off against two fellow Republicans in March's primary election. Political newcomers Billy Tripp, 68, a local businessman, and Ryan Patton, a 36-year-old health care administrator, will go up against Simmons, who first took office in January 1999. Since there are no Democrats running, there is a chance the top vote-getter will win the job. However, with three candidates, there is the possibility of a runoff between the top two candidates following the primary. Tripp, whose family has been in Odessa since the turn of the last century, graduated from Odessa High School and has a Bachelor of Business Administration from Texas A&M. Although he currently runs a residential and commercial construction company, Tripp said he's worked in earth construction in the oil field, been involved in oil and gas production, operated a furniture business, and worked as a controller for a couple of companies. He's also spent time farming and ranching with his dad in McCamey. My account background might be beneficial for county business, and my experience in construction would be applicable in my job title in the commissioner's position with roads, bridges, and dirt construction, building construction, Tripp said. He's thought about running for office in the past, but the timing was never right until now, he said. I'm kind of slowing down in the construction business, but I'm energetic and think I have a lot to offer the community. I can give it, I won't say, 100% of my time, but I can give it the majority of my time. I want it to be my primary focus rather than a secondary obligation, like some of them do. In terms of priorities, the married father of two said law enforcement and roads were at the top of his list. I know some things need attention. I know you're aware our courthouse is falling down. We need to address that, see what it's going to take to renovate it, as opposed to going in and tearing it down. But you can't get into that until you know the details. It's in bad shape, and that is something we're going to have to deal with, Tripp said. As for his opponents, Tripp said he refuses to sling any mud. I've never been in politics before, and I'm not interested in partisan politics. I don't want it to be that kind of a race. I think I have something to offer, Tripp said. I just feel I have a lot of energy and have something to offer the county. Patton is another Odessa native. The Odessa High School grad obtained his associate's degree in general studies and his bachelor's degree in business administration from American Intercontinental University. He also has a master's degree in business administration from Louisiana State University, Shreveport. For the past 7 years, Patton has worked for the Stewart Medical Group, running operations for roughly 50 healthcare providers and 30 clinics, including Odessa Regional Medical Center and Scenic Mountain Medical Centers. When he was in his early teens, Patton said he began to work for his mother, Lois, who did medical billing and consultation work for physicians. He had spent hours on the phone verifying patients' insurance and working to get physicians paid. As I got older and had more time, I started actually taking on clients and billing out claims and processing the claims for physicians, Patton said. After obtaining his associate's degree, Patton continued to work, opting not to pursue his bachelor's degree immediately. However, at the age of 23, he was diagnosed with nephroblastoma, a kidney cancer. After having his kidney removed and while going through chemotherapy, he decided to go back to school. He started out as a political science major at college, but quickly found out that it wasn't for him. I thought, what do you want to do? And well, you've been doing healthcare and medical stuff for 6-7 years now. You could stick with that. And you don't hate it. You actually kind of enjoy it. And you love digging and fixing things and working for doctors. And so I said, let's just stick with that and run with that. And I feel like I've been pretty successful in doing so, Patton said. The former Boy Scout realized early on he loves serving others and has been involved in several nonprofits and the Young Professionals Group. Pursuing public office is an obvious next step for him, he said. He is a firm believer that local officials should be the ones making the decisions that impact local residents. The COVID situation has had a lot of federal input. The state is constantly, right now, fighting the current administration on the different mandates we've seen pushed out, Patton said. Being in healthcare, I'm all about protecting yourself and your family and doing what's right for you, but this has to be your decision. As an American, we should be able to make those decisions. The mandates from the federal government are, I think, an overreach into our day-to-day lives. If the local officials want to look at some of those things, then those local people should have those conversations and make those decisions. They shouldn't be mandated. Although the married father of a 5-year-old boy concedes he leads a busy life, Patton said he believes he's got the time and energy to serve the community. He has some definite ideas on what issues he'd like to tackle if elected. Initially, we have to get a plan together. We have to have a vision for what we're going to do 5, 10, 15 years down the road with our infrastructure, Patton said. We have facilities in place right now that are in dire need of some level of support. Our current leadership has allowed that situation to get to where it is at, and right now we're just kind of ignoring it. Specifically, Patton said he's talking about the courthouse, library, and roads. I was happy to see they finally did some work at the Gardendale Park, and they're slowly doing the others as well. But how long did it take before they got rid of that rusty equipment? How long are we going to let the courthouse continue to have sewage seeping from the ceiling? Patton asked. I'm not saying we have to get in and we've got to replace that courthouse tomorrow, but I think we need to have a plan for what we're going to do. Right now, there's no vision coming out of our current court. He'd also like to make sure the county is seeking any and all available grants. He personally would like the county to evaluate the health department and improve transparency with constituents. Being in healthcare, I think we need to evaluate the health department. We need to look back at our reaction to the pandemic, and we need to see how we can plug in the healthcare system through Medical Center and our private partners with ORMC, and see how we can bring the three entities together, Patton said. I feel like we need to do a better job of taking care of the health of our citizens. There can be a lot done there. Patton said he was disappointed the county opted to hire a consultant to explore ways to spend American Recovery Plan Act funds because it meant missing a deadline that would have allowed the county to be reimbursed by FEMA for those funds. I think it's interesting that we have to get a consultant to tell us how to spend the money. I think that we should have a lot of smart minds employed today within our county that should be able to guide us, Patton said. I'm not in all of those executive meetings to know what they're being told about this consulting firm, but I feel like we should be able to make some decisions on our own and not have to waste money on that. If elected, Patton said he would be highly visible in the community and accessible. Greg has been in that seat for 22 years, and you don't see him unless it's an election year, Patton said. I've personally emailed Greg and never received a response. I know others who have tried to reach out for one reason or another and never received a response. I think if you're elected into this position, you should be accessible to a degree so your people can get a hold of you, whether it be for something good, bad, or ugly. Patton also said he's persistent and wouldn't allow disagreements derail communications. He pointed to recent disagreements between the hospital district, city, and county. I feel like I'm an individual who's going to come back and say, hey, we need to get together, and we really need to figure this out, whether there be hard feelings or not. We've got to move forward and do the right thing for the community, Patton said. Growing up gay, I had to grow a thicker skin and realize it's not about me always. I've got to be able to look past the past, show back up, and be available, and continue pushing those conversations to take place. Optimistic and honest are other adjectives he'd used to describe himself, Patton said. I am honest to a fault at times, but it's because I don't feel I need to hide anything. I'm the gay kid who grew up in West Texas who wants to help the community, Patton said. I have voted Democrat in the past. I've voted Republican in the past. I've never voted straight ticket by any means. I feel like there are good and bad on both sides, and I know that people are going to harp on my records as far as primary elections, but I'm okay with that. I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of guy who wants to do the right thing for the community. Simmons, a Grand Prairie native, is gearing up for his 7th election. The president of Security Bank said he wants to continue working for the citizens of Ector County. Having been there and learned the system and learned how county government operates, I just feel like I have a vested interest in trying to continue to maintain the progress I feel we've made over the last several terms, Simmons said. Although he knows it sounds like a cliche, Simmons said he thinks he represents everybody within Ector County. I think my legacy is I'm more of a, I don't know if populist is the right word, but I represent the taxpayer. I don't feel like my job is to protect and grow the government. It's to protect and listen to the voters and the taxpayers. The main thing I do is I do have a lengthy track record, and I've been very consistent in my voting habits over the years. I do try to put the taxpayer first. Simmons compared the county to the United Way. Both entities do a lot of good things with their funding, but they also both receive more requests than they can accommodate. So when the court is asked to do something, usually the first thing I try to figure out is how is it going to impact the taxpayer. There are a lot of people, sick people on Social Security, people on fixed incomes, and it's never a great time to pass on costs to the taxpayers, Simmons said. He's proud that over the years the county has begun to take on more and more economic development. When I first took office, the county had never participated in an economic development project with the city or the chamber, and that was one of the areas I really thought at the time was a real shortfall for the county government, Simmons said. We've done 30 to 40 significant projects now over the terms I've been there. That's something I want to continue with. At the top of that list is Nacero's $7 billion natural gas to gasoline plant that will soon be built in Penwell, he said. At the time the commissioners approved the plan, it was the largest economic development project in the state of Texas. I've always thought that hopefully the goal is still to try to diversify our economy away from strictly oil and gas. Those are the kind of things I'm focusing on for the future of the county. Two of my kids have gone to college, and they both have come back here and found good jobs. If reelected, Simmons said the court will continue on a new juvenile detention facility, improve parks, and find a way to renovate the library or build a new one. He'd like to figure out what to do with the county's aging courthouse, but fears there's too much dissension right now to address the matter. There are those who would like to rebuild on its current site, and others who would like to build a new facility south of Interstate 20. I'm not opposed to either options, but up until now my focus has been to keep it in the downtown area and keep it as a kind of community staple downtown, Simmons said. I think right now, because of the diverse opinions on it, the court has just decided to kind of wait until the community as a whole comes together. A $95 million bond to construct a new courthouse that included underground secured parking failed in 2013. Simmons, who moved to Odessa in 1990, initially ran for office out of frustration. I think it was just the sense of not having any control as a voter or constituent. I felt somebody needed to represent individuals as a whole. It seemed like everything was always focused on special interests and kind of the good old boy network, if you will, Simmons said. I was an outsider, more or less. I'd only been here 8 years or so when I ran. I had gotten frustrated with the way things seemed to be going, and somebody just finally said, "Well, why don't you run and do something about it?" The government always needs good people to run for office, so he's never surprised or upset when people choose to run against him, Simmons said. "It's a great job. I enjoy being a commissioner, and I think, obviously, there are people like I was the first time. They think, I want to get involved. I want to make a difference. I always assume that's the motivation for people to step up," Simmons said. "Obviously, there's things out there that might trigger people, though. One issue might motivate people to step in and try to fix it." Simmons, who has been donating his net salary since 2015 to his church and various causes, said there are several benefits to having served on the court for so long, and one of them is relationships he's established. "I was brand new to it one time, too, so I'm not saying by any means another person couldn't come in and be successful, but it does take some time. Over time, you learn how to work with different people. Everybody's different. They have different hot buttons and different issues that are important to them. Over time, you learn how to deal with what does this person expect, what does this person want to hear, and if I'm able to give them what they want, how do I deliver that news? If I'm not able to give them what they want, how do I deliver that news?" Although he may not be the most popular commissioner, the married father of four said he's always respectful. Another benefit to his long tenure is patience. He's gotten used to the pace. "It just moves very slowly. That was probably my biggest learning curve. I felt like, hey, I'm here, we're going to fix these issues, and nothing gets fixed in a short period of time." That's one thing anybody coming in is going to find shocking. There's so many people who have to work through so many departments. It's just a slow-moving system. That might not be a bad thing. It keeps people from overreacting and doing something quick and foolish. The last day to register to vote is January 31st. Early voting begins February 14th and ends February 25th. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. Dr. Thomas Hostat was born September 5th, 1933, in Ryan, Oklahoma, to Leslie and May Hostat, and died January 3rd in Odessa. He is survived by his wife Muriel, son Loyal and wife Kathy, daughter Leslie and her husband Dan Borwick, four grandchildren. Memorial concert to be announced. Condolences to the family. Please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Laura Lee Hurley, age 60, was born in Odessa to the late Billy and Betty Hurley and passed peacefully away, surrounded by family and friends at her home in Austin, following a hard-fought battle against metastatic breast cancer. Laura is survived by her sister Carolyn Morris and husband Randy of Odessa, brother Alan Hurley of Odessa, nephew and a niece and a great-nephew and niece. Memorial gifts in Laura's name may be directed to St. John's United Methodist Church at stjohnaustin.org. And or the Cal K. Yow Foundation at kayow.com. Celebration of life services in person and live stream at www.facebook.com/St. John Austin. 10 a.m. Saturday, January 15th at St. John's United Methodist Church in Austin. Reception to follow. Masks required per church COVID protocols. Marilyn Ruth Laffmiller, Farthing Roloff, age 85, of Odessa, died on January 4th at home with her husband Ron by her side and surrounded by several members of her congregational family. Visitation will be Sunday evening, January 9th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Monday, January 10th, at Beit Haderach Messianic Jewish Congregation in Midland, officiated by Rabbi Benjamin Burton. Marilyn was born to Marshall and Gladys Carr Laffmiller in Mount Vernon, Illinois, on February 13, 1936. Marilyn is preceded in death by her parents, stepmother Lucille Lankford Laffmiller, nephew James Robert Laffmiller, niece Anna Langenberg. She is survived by her husband of 53 years, Ron Roloff, her nieces. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the charity of your choice. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Raymond Clark Ray Berry, age 85, was called to his eternal resting place on December 4th in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Born on November 20th, 1936 in Dallas, to William and Frankie Berry, he is survived by his wife Carol, daughters Denise and husband Curtis Crawford, Nancy and husband Paul Gordy, and Bonnie Cleveland, his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, his brothers Bill Berry and Donald Berry. Visitation will be held on Saturday, January 15th at 12:30 p.m. at French Lomas, with a funeral service to follow. Per family's request, virtual service will be available for those who are unable to attend in person or who prefer to not wear a mask during the service. Please note masks will be required, and the family has asked you leave them on throughout the duration of the service. Thank you in advance for helping us keep everyone safe. Please visit the online guestbook for Ray at www.frenchfunerals.com. Laura Lynn Rawlings McKnight died December 29th, surrounded by loved ones at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. She was born September 29, 1951, in Tulia, Texas, to Leroy Rawlings and Julianne Como Rawlings. She was preceded in death by her parents, Lee and June Rawlings, and two brothers, John and Donald Rawlings. She is survived by her husband, Mike, her three children, Aaron and wife Margie of Odessa, Joseph Lee of Payson, Arizona, Amanda and husband Austin Rogers of San Antonio, and three grandchildren. A private memorial will be held in Odessa, and a graveside service will be held at the Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Abilene. In lieu of flowers, she requested donations to the Children's Home of Lubbock, P.O. Box 2824, Lubbock, Texas, 79408, the Odessa Professional Police Officer Association, PPOA, at 205 North Grant, Odessa, Texas, 79761, or the charity of your choice. Angie Ray McAfee, 81, passed from this life on January 1st in Odessa. She was born on May 19, 1940, to Wesley and Eva Spinks in Austin. Those left to cherish her memories are children Debbie Harris, Billy and Barbara Heath, Donna Perkins, Douglas Moore, her grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by the love of her life, Larry McAfee, her parents, and a brother, Roy Allen. Burial took place at Ector County Cemetery. Condolences to the family may be made to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Patsy Ruth Hunt, 82, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 2nd in Odessa. Funeral services scheduled for 10 a.m. January 11th at Westside Apostolic Church. Visitation will be held on Monday, January 10th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Burial will follow at the funeral service at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Jerry Jackson, 83, died Friday, January 7th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Isabel Lozano Sr., 94, died Saturday, January 8th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Michael McClendon, 61, of Amarillo, died Friday, January 7th in Amarillo. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by School or Funeral Home of Amarillo. Royce Clayton Mitchell, 68, of Odessa, died Monday, January 3rd in Odessa. Memorial services scheduled for 12 noon, January 10th, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Manuel Manny Maldonado, age 49, of Odessa, made his journey to the Lord on January 4th. He was born September 19th, 1972, to Pedro and Elpidia Maldonado in Pecos. Those left to cherish his memory are his daughters Sabrina Patino Maldonado and Michaela Merrill Maldonado. His mother, Elpidia Valenzuela, sisters Yolanda Maldonado Alaniz, Leticia Ramirez and husband Ronnie, Yuritza Castillo and husband Michael, many nieces and nephews, and seven great-nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his father, Pedro Pete Maldonado, paternal grandparents Manuel and Elisa Maldonado, maternal grandparents Juan and Juanita Valenzuela. A visitation will be held Saturday, January 8th, starting at 6 p.m. at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel in Odessa. A rosary will be held Sunday, January 9th at 7 p.m., Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. A funeral mass will be held Monday, January 10th at Holy Redeemer at 10 a.m. in Odessa, with burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences to the family may be made online to acreswestfuneral.com. Adolfo Ruiz, 44, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 5th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 11th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Velma Jane Watkins, 85, of Odessa, died Monday, January 3rd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Monday, January 10th, at Calvary Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. The family will receive friends at the funeral home on Sunday, January 9th, from 2 to 3 p.m. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Optometrist versus ophthalmologist. To your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, I am going to a very competent optometrist who has diagnosed glaucoma in both of my eyes 6 months ago. As there is good history and documentation of the condition of my optic nerve over several years, I do not have to use drops for now. I must continue to return every 6 months to have my eyes checked so that he may assess my condition. I am content with this direction from the optometrist, but with a condition such as glaucoma, would I be better served by going to an ophthalmologist? Dr. Roach writes, optometrists can treat glaucoma in all 50 states now. Optometrists are expert in diagnosing and treating most cases of glaucoma. However, they may still refer to an ophthalmologist in cases where the diagnosis is uncertain, when multiple medications are prescribed or the patient cannot tolerate them, or when the disease progresses despite treatment. In your case, it sounds like an ophthalmologist isn't needed. I believe optometrists would refer their patients to an ophthalmologist if they felt it were necessary.
Wedding invites sent only to family's female relatives. Dear Abby, my niece is getting married this spring, which has created a dilemma for my immediate family. When the Save the Date cards went out, she addressed them only to the women in the family. We thought it was a mistake at first, but now the invitations have arrived, and they are also addressed to the women only. My husband and my son, her first cousin, feel slighted. My son's wife was invited, but she doesn't know the bride at all. It seems the bride has a limited number of guests she can invite for the venue. She also has a large number of friends and the groom's family attending. Out of respect for my son and my husband, and a son-in-law who was also excluded, we will all respond that we will not attend. I feel terrible not being able to see my niece walk down the aisle, but I'm not used to my spouse being ignored. Am I doing the right thing? Signed, Puzzled in Florida. Dear Puzzled, before you refuse the wedding invitation, call your niece and ask if she is intentionally excluding the men. Because women make most of the social arrangements, she may not have realized that each guest's name must appear on the invitation, rather than an attempt to exclude family members because their chromosomes are not the same as hers. This may simply be an etiquette boo-boo. Dear Abby, I have been married for 35 years and have a recurring problem with no solution in sight. My wife sets frozen meat on the counter to thaw. She says she can't count on thawing it in the fridge because it takes too long and interferes with her meal planning. Her mother has always done it this way, and no one has ever gotten sick. I try talking to her, but it only ends up in a fight. Any suggestions would be appreciated. Signed, Risky in Illinois. Dear Risky, the Food and Drug Administration has issued guidelines about food preparation because people have gotten very sick when it wasn't done properly. Over the last 10 or 15 years, conditions in some of our slaughterhouses and agricultural operations have deteriorated, and consumers have died because of it. Whether you can convince your wife to change her ways, I can't predict. But you might be doing her a favor if you visit FDA.gov and print out some information for her and her mother-in-law. Better to be safe than sorry. Dear Abby, my wife is part of a Christmas cookie exchange with her sisters-in-law and her mother. Three of them make beautiful, tasty cookies. The other one's cookies aren't very good, so the others don't put them on their trays. Instead, they happily accept them and then give them away. I believe someone should reach out to this woman and gently suggest she make a different kind of cookie so she isn't wasting her time, energy, and money. I've been told to stay out of it. Your thoughts. Signed, Waste of Cookies in New York. Dear Waste of Cookies, ideally, the woman might want to know that her cookie isn't well-liked. In the real world, however, her feelings might be hurt. You have been outvoted. Right now, everybody's happy. If the temptation to say something becomes overwhelming, put a good cookie in your mouth and keep it shut.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.